some such for this homeless services center?
It's 1/6 something from what I've read.
If you add, you know, and I suppose that some of that is private donations, and some of that is county money, some of that is federal money, but that's a lot of bucks for there to be no fresh water services for homeless people, for there to be inadequate food services. You had a number of demands. Have any of them been met? Let's do a progress report, Lou, on how, what's been met and what hasn't been met.
Some things have improved. You know, the food, as far as palatability, and I think probably in amount has been brought up to date, which is good. The serving of the food was one of my things that I wanted to see improved, and basically it's pretty much the same as it was. When you put out 4 or 5 pounds of butter and a half a dozen cups of sugar and a milk thing that you have to get out with water pitchers, you know, that's not sanitary. That is a block on movement through there. Well,
hang on a second, my mic was down. I asked you that question. Let me repeat it. On Thursday at 2:30, are you going to be bringing these concerns to the attention of the staff and the management at 115 Coral Street, if not before, and by some written means? I don't know.
Well, I think they are aware of these things. I've talked to the people about it. I've told them, you know, that this is not very good. I've asked them to go over and look at St. Francis Kitchen, which feeds the same amount of people, mostly the same people, daily, 5 days a week. And the guy went over and looked at it, and he came back and told me what he would do was...
You're talking about Ken Coles.
Yeah. He came back the third day on the job. I asked him when he first visited me down at the courthouse to take a look at this stuff, and then come back and talk to me. I didn't think he'd be back the next afternoon, but he was. And he told me they had the water fountain. The problem they were having was getting it installed, and then right after that he told me they had a valve problem for pressure, and nothing was done after that that I know for the water fountain. It was a 12 so foot piece of quarter-inch copper tube and was nailed up on the wall, and I walked by there nearly 2 weeks later after me and him had had that talk, and the end of the tubing, which would connect to the water fountain, was in a dirty garbage can with somebody's discarded dirty socks on it. So I walked up there and I told him, I said, you know, this ain't gonna get it. I said, you know, the water fountain was the one thing I was really adamant about. You know, if you can't get a drink of water there, they got this 10-gallon igloo water cooler, construction type, and it leaks at the spout, and sometimes it's just not filled up. So you're back to using the sink and the laundry, I mean the bathroom facilities, to get a drink of water. And he told me that he was doing all he could. It was just some problems that he had allowed some other people to get involved with, and I told him, I said, well, mine and your talk was 9 years. And he said, well, you be the judge. I said, well, I ain't going to be the judge. I thought you was a man of your word. And I still do. But that afternoon, I went down and left a one-page letter in the mayor's office post box.
What afternoon was that?
I think it was Tuesday, because the next day would have been the 15th day. that since I'd ended my fast. I ended my fast about 2 o'clock on Wednesday, and it was 2 weeks down the road. And it was last Tuesday, if you don't know when it was. I'm pretty sure it was Tuesday. And then I got her phone number and called and left basically the same message on her. What is it? It was, I was asking her as help of the, in her position as mayor and as a board chairman of the Homeless Resources Center to help me to get that water fountain in. You know, everybody has told me they didn't give me no promises, but they damn sure give me their word, and their word was, as soon as we can get that up, we're gonna get it up. It needs to be up, and we'll see to it. Well, that's a promise.
You know, it's interesting. I spoke to Catherine Byers the day, I think it was the day you ended your fast, and she told me, she was apologizing for the water fountain not being in that day, but she said she was sure it was going to be in the next day, the tomorrow. Now that, I guess, was what, almost 3 weeks ago now?
Oh, at least, at least. But anyhow, it don't matter, it ain't in. I do know from Ken Cole that he has purchased a new handicap accessible water fountain, and it was after I had talked to the mayor, because he was informed that me and her had had some communication.
You mean after she'd received your Tuesday letter?
Yeah, him and her had some communication, and he said, well, you were busy. I said, well, the way I look at it, it's everybody's got a boss, and the boss should be the judge instead of somebody that's trying to work with somebody.
Let me ask you, Lou, what's been the reaction of the homeless community? Have you gotten much support? Do they regard you as a troublemaker? Do they think you're shooting at the moon? What's the story?
Well, I've been told that I went around it the wrong way. They couldn't tell me the right way, but they told me I'd gone about it the wrong way. And one of the things that shocked me is some of the people that have lived there for quite a long time felt like that I was trying to get the place closed. Now, the only time closing the place ever came up was in a private conversation between me and the new director, Ken Cole. He said if these situations couldn't be improved or bettered, he said he would see that the place was closed, because he saw that he thought that these were reasonable requests and needed. Now, another thing is some of the people that live there or use the place quite frequently is wondering who paid me. Did the mayor pay me? Did the newspapers or the televisions pay me to do that? And yeah, you know, I wish they had. It would have been a little bit more to my benefit. No, nobody paid me. Some people gave me some stuff. They gave me $1, $2. The most I ever had at one time down there was $11.
Some people provided occasional cups of coffee.
Some people did. And some of them were newspaper people. Some of them were radio people. You know, my needs were met. But my needs were so small that it would have been difficult for them not to be met.
Let me ask you this, Lou. I've always been of the opinion that you need really to organize a bunch of people to support concerns. Like, I mean, we're talking now about this, the concerns that certain minimal sanitation conditions, or even that the Homeless Services Center and the mayor keep their promises, goddammit, to people, you know, to public promises publicly made, or perhaps semi-publicly made, to you and other people about what they're going to do to clean up the center. And apparently, they're taking their own sweet time about it if they're keeping their promises. But I want to shift back to this issue of troll busting, because I think here we're talking about something that really is something of a crisis. What's your reading on this? Am I too much of an alarmist? Is it a crisis, this troll busting?
Yes, it's a crisis. Whether it's one troll busting incident or many, many, you have to understand that it's vigilantism on a certain population of people. Well, that's unfair justice to be the judge, jury, and executioner or the torturer of anybody. But one of the things that at the little meet and forum thing over there the other day at the center was we haven't had but one troll busting incident come across our desk.
They said there were two, but you know.
Well, there's one's vague. The other one is supposed to be.
There were two police reports filed. One about Ted Reamer, something. The other, Joe Barker. But I, as I said, I have reported on this show interviews with people regarding at least 10 to 15 such incidents in the last 4 months. And I guess what we should do now is shortly, as soon as you've made your comments, play a bit of the hours-long session where we had these three police officers fundamentally reassuring everybody that everything was okay.
Well, here's the deal. Whether it's done by a hunting party that calls themselves troll busters, or if it's done by another individual, homeless or not homeless, to a person that is homeless, you know, there's very, very little difference in assault or aggravated assault as far as the perpetrator. You know, these can be prosecuted, they can be investigated, they can be proven, they can get jail time punishment. Or, you know, if we're going to say, hey, you know, if I beat you up, I'm not going to be punished because we're adult people. That's a debauchery of the law.
Indeed it is, Lou. And I think my concern was when I was glad to hear that this meeting was thrown on Thursday. I was glad to see people come, and indeed they even had the police leave for a while people talked about it at the end. What I did not like was it looked more like a kind of a media occasion for people pretending that something was getting done when nothing I saw. I saw no really constructive steps taken. I heard police officers give contradictory advice. Sergeant Clark talking about, well, we're going to warrant check you regardless, because that's what we do. And then Sergeant Baker reassuring everybody, oh, yeah, but we'll go and we'll try and pull the warrant if it's for something minor, if you're a victim. And then we heard Sergeant Baker saying, tell me where you camp in the woods, and we'll kind of look over your sights and protect you. How many homeless people are going to believe that unless that comes directly from the police chief and that's some kind of, actually verified, backed-up statement from the city council, backed up by, you really need to change in the law, because any number of bigots, some of whom live in the Harvey West area, can say, we want vigorous enforcement of the camping ordinance, and we're going to sue this fucking city unless it does that. And what that means is that homeless people will suffer because residents are blaming homeless people for every homeless person for the trashing and the hypodermic needles left behind by a few. And saying to the community, we insist that all homeless people live in peril, sleep and hide, and essentially sleep in unsafe places so that we can maintain our own sense of our own community's pristine quality. My point here is that the assurances given by the police department to the homeless community on Thursday that they don't have to worry if they're reporting violent incidents and that they can sleep safely is crap. Am I being too extreme here? What's your sense?
Well, there's a deal not in my backyard, and I've had a backyard that I wouldn't have liked a lot of things happening in my backyard, but there are so many things happening, you know, I can't differentiate assault or aggravated assault by the person's stature in the community. You know, I can't do that. You know, if it's done by a person that's homeless, then fine. Prosecute him to the fullest extent of the law and sentence him to the fullest extent of the law. But at the same time, do that to the house broke, wannabe vampire. And, you know...
Let me ask you this. Are police officers... you heard those police officers assuring us that, oh, tell us where your camps are and we'll make sure everything's okay. And they said things like, feel free to report assaults. We're not going to arrest or hassle you. Do you believe those assurances?
I have to wonder... If you have a crime already in your docket or pocket, you know, that they wouldn't act on it because it's part of law enforcement. And they may be able to get it reduced, squashed, or whatever because of cooperation in an investigation, especially if it's called where the infraction is minor according to what they're trying to get done. Now, at the same time, though, it don't matter who's getting the beating or who's giving the beating. You know, I've talked to a bunch of people that are homeless that have been broke up by, quote, troll busters. Probably 20, 25.
So you would estimate there have been 25 beatings?
Yeah. Now, the deal is, though, is everybody says, well, that's old nutty person saying that, and they get it from their partner or their friend or some other person, you know. Well,
you mean
it don't
account?
Matter who they get it from. You know, assault.
You're saying that some of these assaults may be homeless on homeless rather than
people? Well, that's exactly what the investigator up there said, you know.
I put more stock in you than the investigator, I got to tell you.
Well,
based on my experience with these men who are investigating. I'm reaching toward the end of the show, and there are a couple things I want to do quickly before the end of the show. We've been talking to Lou Rice here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Lou's 27-day hunger fast should largely, in my mind, be accredited with some of the improvements that are happening in the Homeless Services Center. Though one of the things we wanted to talk to you about and hope you will return to talk about is Karen Gillette. And the official word from the news media and from Gillette herself has generally been she retired because of burnout or she's too tired or so forth. But we hear from other sources that the reason she left had to do with other causes. Do you have any brief statement on that?
Yeah, well, the causes is probably CYOA. That where I come from, there's a lot of people obsessed with cover your own ass. And I'm sure that she had that in mind, too.
What kind of CYOA are we talking
about?
Well,
you know, if you're the chief of something and your employees are basically allowed to do some of the things that I saw her employees do.
Things like?
Well, smoking marijuana and drinking beer on the ISSP churches. As I understand it, she was like the umbrella executive doer of that. And, you know, she was pretty easy to be a good publicity person for the boards and the people of that she owed her position to, you know. She was that. I'll say that for her. If she knew any of these people were coming around, you saw an awful lot, like the fox guard in the hen house, and if they weren't coming around, you didn't see her very much.
You know, it's interesting, and indeed that's one of the objections I had to the little show on Thursday, that it was a sort of a media show. You had the television and the news media there. And finally, Donna Murillo, I want you to talk about in a later show, who's the president of the board of directors currently of the Homeless Services Center, showed up and had this really meaningless discussion with you where she essentially ignored all the 7 points that you had presented. We haven't got time to talk about that now, but I want to invite you back on Thursday or next Sunday to discuss that at length. And I also want to point out that this thing about drug use, I know you, for you it's a matter of much greater interest than for me. I don't care what drugs a person uses, him or herself, as long as they don't abuse other people with their behavior. But I want to say that at least one and possibly two members of the Homeless Services Center board was thrown off the board at the behest of Karen Gillette through the intervention of Catherine Byers, the mayor, last year, because they brought up the issue of Karen Gillette's suborning of drug use by her staff. I don't give a shit about the drug use by staff. I say as long as it doesn't affect their behavior, I don't care. I mean, I know that's not your position, but I just want to point out this issue was brought up a year ago. The people who might have exposed it or at least caused questions about it were dumped from the board of the Homeless Services Center, Becky Johnson and Laura Tucker, both of them people who've had a lot of experience with homeless people, probably more than virtually 90% of the board. But Lou, right now I'm going to have to thank you for being on the show and give you 1 minute to sum up anything you want to say, because then I got to rush ahead before the red hen begins to just kick me out of the studio. And she's pretty vicious, as you can see.
You know, of all the hundreds down there at the post office, most of them I gave the sheet with the seven things, seven hopes or wishes that could be addressed. And they were very concerned and very supportable. Three people told me that I was going to sit down there and die, and it wasn't going to change a damn thing. As I look back on it, I think they were very, very honest and very, very accurate, you know, because the things that I was for changing seems like it's bogged down because of board members of HSC says, well, where's the money? Where's the money? Where's the money? There was very little money. Very little money.
Gee, I guess all that $1.6 million kind of disappeared somewhere.
Well, I heard the former director is over in Europe and close to that. What's that country? It's famous for the number bank account.
Switzerland.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, well, hell. If I had some place to go to check on my possessions in Europe, I don't think I would be far from that.
Thank you, Lou Rice. I appreciate your being with us, and I'm hoping you'll return on Thursday. A couple of quick announcements here. Those of you who want to have questions at the forum on Tuesday for Representative Farr or Bombs for Peace Farr should give a call to the voicemail of Lydia at 425-3466. These questions have to be in by Tuesday noon, so you probably should call earlier. If you have questions about the event, you can talk to Lydia at 427-0346. And you can also have questions for Farr by contacting Donna Blitzer, who's Farr's flack artist, that is to say the person who handles his stuff, 701 Ocean Street, room 318A in Reading. Or you can email her at Donna, D-O-N-N-A, dot Blitzer, B-L-I-T-Z-E-R, at mail.house.gov. If you want to have any of these numbers repeated, you can call 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Finally, in our last story of the day, we're going to follow the adventures of the Biotic Bakers Brigade. That's okay. The hen is being very nice to me today. Usually she's... actually, she's always very nice. She's probably too nice. You may recall the Biotic Bakers Brigade, which pied Willie Brown. This is Brown, the guy who promised to treat homeless people better and stop arresting them for sleeping, and actually doubled, if not tripled, the number of Matrix-style arrests in San Francisco. Three of these people have been in jail for up to, well, the three of them that were involved in the pieing were in jail. I've been in jail since, I think, February. That's 3 months. ESPN. They came to a court recently, and here's a rather prejudiced article that probably doesn't cover what happened, but it's the only news I have, from the San Francisco Chronicle of yesterday. Judge refuses to free half-baked protesters. Should be half-baked judge refuses to free protesters, but let's let that one go. Mayor's pie-tossing opponents sent back to jail. Three members of the Biotic Baking Brigade were led shackled into a San Francisco courtroom yesterday, that's on Friday, where a judge refused to let them out of jail before they served their full sentences for hitting Mayor Willie Brown with pies. Superior Court Judge Ernest Goldsmith said the defendants left him with no alternative but to keep them in jail when they rejected a sentence of 3 years probation for their battery conviction on the November 7th pie assault on the mayor at a Civic Center event. Goldsmith refused to alter his order that the three remain jailed without early release. They were sentenced to 6 months, but with good time credit, the three will serve 4 months and be out by early summer. Gerard Livernois, 34, began his sentence March 10th, and Rahul Janowski and Justin Gross, both 27, went to jail February 26th. All three said they rejected probation because it could impinge on their political activities. In a big way, I might add. Chief Assistant District Attorney Paul Cummins told the judge yesterday that if the defendants were willing to stay away from the mayor and desist from throwing pies, he would not oppose immediate probation. Again, probation would mean any time they have a contact with the police, they might be forced to serve the entire sentence in a hearing in which they would not even get a jury trial, in which the standard of evidence would not be beyond a reasonable doubt, but would be simply preponderance of the evidence. Hence, police could send them back to jail for a much longer time if they participated in any kind of protest, having nothing to do with pies. This, of course, does not appear in the story. Neither Goldsmith's nor Cummins' responses pleased the defense attorneys. They said their clients were being treated politically, an assertion that irked Goldsmith. This is a battery, plain and simple, he said. Defense attorneys Kim Malcheski and Mark Vermeulen contended that after sentencing the defendants to 6 months, Goldsmith modified his order to read that the three would not be allowed early release to work in the sheriff's community service program. Typically, defendants convicted of nonviolent crimes are eligible to be released to work early in this program, while those convicted of violent crimes often are not. Goldsmith denied revising his order, saying he had merely clarified it. This shows this has been a totally political case from day one, and the justice is a sham in liberal San Francisco, Malcheski said afterward. The pie throwers said they were protesting Brown's homeless policy, which they said harasses the down and out. But the two defense attorneys pledged to appeal Goldsmith's ruling to the State Court of Appeal next week. The defense attorneys left in as bad a mood as when they had arrived, to find their clients coming into the Superior Court hearing room at 400 McAllister Street in chains. Malcheski and Vermeulen both objected strenuously to the defendants being in shackles. The judge told them to take it up with the Sheriff's Department, which has custody, because, quote, the issue is outside my purview. Dare I add, horse shit. Eileen Hurst, spokeswoman for the Sheriff's Department, said the Civic Center courtroom is not equipped with the same security features as the criminal courts of the halls of justice, and when a criminal case is being heard at 400 McAllister, precautions are taken. That's it for this session of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Please check out the Loudon Nelson protest, still, I'm assuming, going on down there, against the war, against the sleeping ban, for freedom for Rumia Abu Jamal. We're going to hear a little song about the Biotic Bakers Brigade. Those are the fearless pie makers who, shall we say, gave Willie Brown his just desserts. I'll be returning on Thursday at 6 o'clock. If you have any questions, want to catch any phone numbers you may have missed, give a call at the 423-HUFF, and please stay tuned for the little red hen who follows me, and thank you to the hen for the extra 2 or 3 minutes that I have stolen, I say stolen, from her and her chicks.
See the man in his limousine, in his tie and well-dressed shirt, hoping that he's not been seen on the lookout for her dessert. He knows that he is guilty, and the visit might be paid by the vegan vigilantes of the Biotic Baking Brigade. What's that sailing through the air in the boardroom? See them shiver. You can spend your life hoping for pie in the sky, but the Baking Brigade delivers. City's soul to the landlord's greedy pack. your crimes will fade, but your sellout soul will be exposed by the biotic baking brigade. Watch that sailing through the air in the boardroom, see them shiver. You can spend your life hoping for pie in the sky, but the baking brigade delivers. So if you cut down the last of the forests, spew poison in the air. Don't you be surprised to find that cheesecake in your hair. Yes, if you are a corporate criminal, you've surely made the grade to receive a fresh baked goodie from the biotic baking brigade. What's that sailing through the air in the boardroom? See them shiver. You can spend your life hoping for pie in the sky, but the baking brigade delivers.